This morning I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. Ian Stone here on the Comedy Breakfast here with Paul Mortimer. Morning, Morts.
Morning.
It's quite a severe haircut, Morts. That is quite a severe.
You should have seen it a week ago.
Number one, mate. It's a number one.
It was a minus one 2 weeks ago.
I can't do number one haircuts.
Why not?
I look like a well-fed concentration camp victim. To be honest, I don't look. It's not a good look.
Okay.
For me, right?
I'm just visualizing.
It's too Jew and too. I don't know. I can't do it. So I decided I keep the hair for the moment. While I've got some, I'll keep.
Yeah, hair's fine.
Granit Xhaka has said it's win or bust for the side in Baku, right? I just saw there was a little picture of Santi Cazorla sending a message. I wish he was in our midfield. I love him.
Back in the Spain squad, wasn't he?
He's back in the Spain
proper
squad.
Football,
apparently, he's okay.
Yeah.
Why we sold him, I have no idea.
Because they thought he was finished, that's why.
Because they did. He was having nine grafts and all the rest
everything.
Of everything.
They thought
almost
he was finished.
Almost lost his foot.
That's right. There was something eating away at his Achilles
horrendous.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, he had to take a bit off his arm where he's got like half a tattoo. Two on his arm now because they took a bit of the skin and they stuck it on his ankle. Yeah, grim. Maurizio Sarri, let's talk about this because Maurizio Sarri stormed out of a training session yesterday. They were having some open training session in the stadium in Baku and they didn't have time to finish it. Well, there's various things. One, they didn't have time to finish it, so he couldn't practice set pieces. The other one was there was a row between Gonzalo Higuain and David Luiz. You know what? Is he going to storm out after a row? I can't see it.
Row between two players is not a problem at all. It happens in every single training session you can think of. There'll be some sort of, someone will trip someone or someone will bounce someone or nudge someone and they'll have a row about it. It's over in seconds. It's over in seconds. It's not even, they'll wake up today, Higuain and Luis, probably even room together and go, well, that was just not a big deal. We had a bit of the ump with each other. That was it. The more important thing for me is Sarri because in these type of games, you have a specific time that you can use the pitch. You have a specific time, so you can use it for a couple of hours now, okay?
Yeah, because the other team are turning up in a couple of hours.
If you've run over your time, which it appears that must have been, that's the only thing I can think of, you've run over the allotted time, then off you come. Simple as that. That's about planning. That's about planning. If you haven't planned for and catered for the fact that you need to do set pieces, to be truthfully honest, if they don't know them now... If they don't know their set pieces now, they've been together all year. They don't know their set pieces now. I mean, that's. And what you look at is his behaviour. You know, who is he doing that for?
That's what I mean. I don't understand. Yeah. I mean, it's not a good look. The players must pick it up as well. They must look at the manager and go, God, he is under massive pressure. And that puts them under more pressure.
Well, the thing about it
is, seems to me.
It could be one of two things. They'll have seen that before and just roll their eyes and go, here we go again. Because it appears that he is one who throws the toys out the pram on a regular basis.
Granddad's having a moody again.
Exactly right. So, to be honest, it may well not bother them at all. Because it may be something they've seen on a regular basis that we haven't seen. This may be the first time we've seen it. They're probably looking at it going, oh.
From an outside point of view, right, and you tell me if this is the case. Because obviously I've got my Arsenal goggles on today. There's no getting away from it. But from an outside point of view, it seems to me that Chelsea look more under pressure than Arsenal do. I'm looking at they've been out to this sort of little thing in America. They didn't particularly want to go. They've had a few more injuries than us. Than Arsenal, so there's that as well. And now Sarri storming off a training session. It's weird because
he's not happy because
it doesn't look it.
They have this ridiculous game where one of their prominent players gets injured, you know, and N'Golo Kante is injured. So there is a lot of pressure on them. And often when, you know, it comes to these situations, what you have to look at is the behaviour of the manager.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he is the one who sets the tone.
And Unai Emery looks as cool and calm.
Oh, he's been here before.
He's done three Europa Leagues and he's won them.
Knows how to win them.
Yeah.
He's cool. Sarri, I'm guessing, I don't know how many finals he's been to because at Napoli he didn't win anything. So I'm wondering how many finals, this may be his first one, I don't know. But he is behaving like someone under extreme pressure, who can't handle it at the moment. What are you laughing for?
Brilliant. I'm just happy. That's all. I'm happy.
But hold on before you... They've got Eden Hazard.
Yeah. That's the only fine the ointment. Yeah. And we was just saying, because you said, oh, I'm looking forward to tonight. I hope Eden Hazard turns up. And I said, I hope he limps off in the first minute. Yeah, so only a minor injury. Nothing to stop him going to Madrid. Well, no, it's sort of weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
because in the end, I'm watching it as a I'm not a neutral.
No,
neutral.
You're a fan.
Want Eden Hazard just to turn up.
Me, that's I'm a neutral. I want a fantastic spectacle. Two teams going at it. That's what I want him
to be anonymous and then go off angrily after 65 minutes, throw his Chelsea shirt in a corner, and then head off.
So you'd take a George Graham 1-0 boring, would you?
There
you go. See,
right
then I'm not watching
with,
it.
I'm
not watching it. If it's that.
Well, fair enough. Don't. It doesn't bother me. Because one, we'll have a trophy, and two, we'll be in the Champions League. Which, let's be fair, you'd have thought they'd be under more pressure because of it.
Yeah.
But they do seem quite serene. I quite like the serenity.
And that is the manager. That is the manager. Look what the manager's done. He is calm. So everything is calm. You look at Chelsea and everything is really quite
a bit pumped up.
It is because the manager has lost his rag. We've seen it.
The Cricket World Cup, which starts tomorrow, which is amazing. I'm looking forward to seeing it and maybe go to a couple of games. Yeah. None of it is on terrestrial TV. It's all on satellite TV. And anyone who hasn't got subscription, the amount of money for subscription, the only thing they can watch are highlights, which are on, Kieran tells me, at something like midnight on Channel 5.
Yeah,
I mean, the only thing, I don't know, midnight on Channel 5, so that sounds like pornography
time. It does, casino TV.
It does, it's that. Yeah. It's really not about watching the cricket highlights. Let's watch Afghanistan against Bangladesh at midnight on Channel 5. I mean, look, we understand the reasons why, right? And this is not having a go at Sky, because I watch Sky regularly and I've got my subscription and it's great and everything. Mm. It is expensive.
Yes, it is.
But I sort of need it for this job. But for people, there's plenty of people out there who just don't have the money.
That's right.
What are they meant to do for the Cricket World Cup?
I think it's disgraceful, especially as it's at home. That's the thing for me. It's at home. There needs to be more access. If we want to, I mean, you know, the ICC or the cricket authorities are looking at new ways of attracting fans. We're doing it in this country with 100. New ways of attracting fans to the stadiums. Now, the best way to do that is have it on terrestrial telly first and foremost.
I know, but how can you, terrestrial telly just does not have the bandwidth to show it. I mean, we're talking about, a 7-hour game? From 10:30 in the morning till half six.
To show the highlights. I mean,
highlights are being shown.
BBC Two or something. Yeah, but at a time where, you know, the optimum time for kids to watch it.
Record them, watch them the next day.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. It's not. It isn't. I mean, most will not do that. Most will not do that. They won't. They'll come in tea time. They'll want to watch it because that's what used to happen. So what's happened is, you know, historically, that's what happened. You come in at tea time. Everything's changing now. Like you say, we have to record it and watch it. And if I miss one, then I've got 3 or 4 recordings to watch,
you know,
and
what?
Then all the results I already know, and then I'm not going to watch it. Cause,
I get it.
Do you know what I mean?
But you know what? We spend our lives now as adults recording stuff and watching it. We did that with Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
We did it with, I've been doing it with Chernobyl.
I've still not seen that.
Oh, my.
What kids do that, though?
Good God. Yeah, well, maybe they have to get their heads around it a little bit more.
But
sorry.
But, Stoney, who do we want to attract to cricket at the moment?
They
want to attract the younger kids. And I'm not talking about those that the suburban kids who already go to cricket clubs. There's a cricket club near me. I'm talking about the inner city kids, the people that wouldn't have ordinarily watched cricket, who look at it and think, you know what? I might give that a bash. It looks half decent. It's those. We're never going to get to people, inner city kids, who may have a natural aptitude to it, but are never have access to it. We're never going to get to those. So you know, and you think about council estate kids who have the technical ability, the hand-eye coordination, the timing, just naturally to be able to play something like cricket, never going to be have access to it because they'll never see it on TV because it's on at stupid o'clock.
Do you think it's let's just say that one of the terrestrial channels, let's say Channel 4 or Channel 5, came in and said, we want to show it at midnight, and the ICC, that's no good, right? We want it at 8 o'clock in the evening after the games are finished. That's when we want it, or 8:30. And they say, well, we have Homes Under the Hammer or Location or whatever, Grand Designs on at that time. And that's a very big program for us. So it's going to cost you more. So basically, I said to the ICC, it's going to cost you more to put it on at that time. And they say, well, we don't have the money. Yeah. Or, I mean,
I understand it. I mean, if you look at the Test cricket, what used to happen on Channel 5 was literally after the end of day's play,
close the play,
it'd be on Channel 5.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff I'm talking about, where it's like a very condensed magazine program, but very well crafted. And it shows you everything, all the highlights that you need, as well as really good analysis.
I'm sure that'll be the same case. That'll be the same for this. It will just be that it'll be 11 o'clock at night or whatever it is,
you'll
or
have
midnight.
To bunk off school the next day, though.
It's not ideal. I would agree. It's not ideal, but I can't quite see a way around it.
There isn't. But like I said, the problem you have is, who do you want to attract to cricket now? Who? You want to attract, not the, like I said, the suburban kids already see it because they live in areas where it is prevalent. It's the inner city kids. It's those that I think, and there are a lot of inner city kids out there who I think have the natural aptitude to be cricketers or sportsmen who never, ever have the access to it.
All right. Well, Andy has come in. Andy Jones, our producer. Do you think it should be on terrestrial TV? And if it should, Andy, I mean, how do they sort it out? Because you can't show it live on terrestrial TV because there ain't the channels. So it has to be on satellite TV for the live feed. But then the highlights are maybe should be on a bit earlier than they are at the moment.
Yeah, the highlights are pretty inaccessible. I think what you want, cricket's got much the same problem as tennis in the same way that it's perceived a middle class, typically white sport in some ways, if we can say that. And the authorities in both are banging the drum about access, getting young people into the game, and yet it's not on terrestrial channels.
No.
And it's not accessible, and then you can't even go and play it with your mates. I do wonder.
You can go and play it with your mates.
We can.
I used to play cricket every summer.
This is what I'm saying. We used to play it on the beach, play it with your mates, play it everywhere. But now it doesn't feel like kids get exposed to it enough, and therefore there's quite a lot of complicated rules. You know, I wonder how many kids of a certain age know how tennis scoring works or how cricket scoring works, and therefore it's impenetrable. It's far easier to pick up a video game that's instantly accessible, that's entirely designed to instant win and gratification, than it is to kind of sit through the complexities of a 4-day test match.
You know,
and
what?
Say
I see what you're saying. Of course, you're absolutely right. But I live, I mean, where I live in North London, there's a cricket club nearby. And I see kids going down there all the time. And they're little coaching, they play little games.
I'm an inner city kid. I live in Shepherd's Bush, okay? We played cricket every summer. Because it was on TV. So what we used to do, FA Cup final would be on TV. We'd watch it. Park was next door, we'd go and play and react all of that. The cricket was on, because it was on TV, we'd go in the park and react it, and play act it. That's what we used to do.
Yeah, you
watch
act
it on
out
TV,
what you've seen, yeah.
And it had nothing to do with there not being any cricket facilities. We'd go, we had stumps, because you could buy the bat and the three stumps, and that's what we'd go and do. So the problem you have is, like you say, times have changed.
This is Love Sport.
I think I've got the squeaky chair today.
Have you?
Yeah. There it goes. Can you hear that?
No, hold on. Look, listen.
That is
that's
you.
Me.
No, that's not even your chair. That's just Paul's knees.
Oh, yeah. Just see, I made no noises as I sat down.
I did notice that. Yeah, I told Paul off ages ago for when he sits down and he's, and then he gets up and he makes another noise. And no doubt, not that I'm there, when he gets in the bath. And he's,
It's funny.
All of that.
Last week we were away on holiday and I did that.
Yeah.
And Sharon said your name straight away.
Of course.
And someone
would
have a moan
out
at you, and I'm like, oh,
yeah, yeah,
God,
yeah.
I can't
get
away. Even though I'm thousands of miles away, I can't get away from you.
I'm always there. Omniscient. Omniscient, omnipresent. That's the word I was looking for. Do you know when they say the Pope's infallible? He must have made mistakes at some point.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just asking.
He's got to have.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. Although, if you were like in a pub quiz, you'd want him on your side. You want someone.
Well, who's going to tell him he's got it wrong?
That's the point.
Who's going to tell him?
Those red shoes don't go with that outfit. That sort of thing. Anyway.
Put on a few pounds.
You wouldn't say that. Anyway, we are talking this morning a lot of stuff about the Europa League final. Arsenal against Chelsea in Baku. There was also a training ground bust up between Gonzalo Higuain and David Luiz. No doubt Luiz left one on him and Higuain wasn't very happy about that. And they squared up or something happened and Sarri stormed off, but possibly not for that reason anyway. But these things do happen. They happen all the time.
Yeah, of course they do.
And by the way, they happen in comedy dressing rooms as well.
Yeah.
They do. Not as frequently.
Because we're not just take the pee out of each other.
Well, yeah. There's some bants goes about.
Love that.
And it's quite high level, as you can imagine.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and the things that are said are very, very rude to each other.
Yeah.
And it can get a bit heated. Not often. Not often. Most of the time it's okay. But I have had a couple of rows in dressing rooms.
The thing about it is you have a row in the dressing room. You have the opportunity to, you know, mete out some punishment on the training pitch.
Well, that's interesting because you don't really have that opportunity in comedy,
exactly.
To be honest. Although I did do last night, I did the Cutting Edge at the Comedy Store, which is a 6-person show, and I can be giving quite nasty sticks
to
people
there, can you?
On stage. Fair play. I can, but in general, I mean, can you perform angry? Can you play angry?
Not for me. It's a difficult thing, I have to say. I mean, I can remember having a fight with a player. On the training pitch, I was playing left back, he was playing right wing, and he couldn't get past me. You have them days where you're on fire, couldn't get past me. I was a step ahead every single time, so he decided to kick me.
Now,
the first couple of times I let it go, and then the next time we've squared up to each other, and he's gone to punch me, but as was the game, I was a second ahead. I could see it coming, leant back. Cracked him one on the jaw, down he went.
Oh, beautiful.
Now I'm standing over him and I start to shake.
Yeah, the adrenaline.
Because it's just not me.
Yeah.
And people looked at me. For the next 10 minutes, I couldn't play. I was just a bag. My legs had gone because it's just not me. It isn't. I don't do stuff like that. But it was he'd gone to punch me in the face. I've just moved out of the way of it and hit him perfect.
Did you feel the swoosh? As he swung off.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you could. I've had somebody aim to punch at me once and it
you
missed.
You feel it, yeah.
And it missed. And actually, it brushed the end of my nose.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still miles away from your face, but it brushed the end of my
gonna
nose.
I was
going
to say something
right?
then,
no,
but
no,
never
I
mind.
I know what you were going to say. I could see him in the booth as well. He was also. But anyway, it did
he
brush
did
the end of
there,
my nose.
Didn't he?
He did, but it didn't. But there was a swoosh.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
As he went past.
I've hit him, down he's gone, and everyone's gone. Because I'll give loads of banter, but I was never physically aggressive at all.
Yeah,
and it unnerved me. It really did. And for the next, like, you know, everything was sorted out, and I struggled to play. We ended up playing against each other again. I struggled to play. I couldn't get it out of my head. Even after training, went home, spoke to my wife, couldn't get it out of my head. It was a horrible thing. Didn't enjoy it at all.
Yeah,
great punch, but didn't enjoy it at all.
The only punch you've thrown.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I've never, ever, ever would do that. It's just horrible.
Listen, you know, some people handle it better than others. There's no getting away from it. Have I seen fisticuffs in a dressing room? I've seen someone pinned up against the wall for stealing material.
For the record, it's not the only punch I've had. I've had another one, sorry.
Oh, now it's coming out.
I can remember that. It's the only two. I've seen that, the grappling up. I've seen the two forwards do it.
Yeah,
because one wouldn't pass to the other. Where it's one of them. They're clean through. Roll it to him. He scores.
And he wouldn't do it.
Wouldn't do it. Held him up. In fact, we all wanted to hold him up. Held him up, mate. And fair play to him. And we let it happen.
This is in practice or in a game?
In a game. You let him happen. At half time in the dressing room. You let it happen because he deserved it.
And the other. So you had the other punch as well. How did you cope with that one? It's probably going to be loads now, isn't there? About when you killed that bloke? Remember that? When you killed that guy. I probably shouldn't have said it.
It was an accident.
Shouldn't have said that on the radio, to be honest with you.
It was an accident. The way I am, I got sent off once in my career, and it was because someone tried to head my foot, and then someone tried to head my elbow.
Yeah.
Innocent bystander. Absolutely nothing to do with me. And the ref sent me off. Couldn't believe it.
Right,
but
okay.
No, punch-ups. The thing about punch-ups is I can remember at Crystal Palace, I turned up there and there was one every other day. Okay, the one I
who was the manager?
Steve Coppell.
Steve Coppell, yeah.
So we had Northerners versus Southerners, Youngs against Oldens, winning goal. Okay, and the ball lands in the goalkeeper's arms. Our centre forward, David White, bless him, he's dead and gone now. His foot ends up in the goalkeeper's chest.
Yeah.
Drop the ball. They are having a punch up, and it's a proper fight. I mean, real proper fight. So the coach. I think Wally Downs was a coach. Three or four players are running towards the goal.
Wally Downs is probably not going to help, is he?
No, I'm running towards the goal, and I'm thinking, right, the innocence in me, they're gonna stop it. Runs towards the goal, taps the ball in the net, and runs off celebrating. And I'm telling you that there's a cup that goes with this. So they're on a tractor celebrate. They're still fighting over there. And I'm sitting there watching it and going, well, no one's going to believe me if I tell them about this. And this happened at least twice a week. Twice a week. I come from Charlton and Aston Villa. Never seen that many, not as many as this. Every other day, there was some sort of punch-up to the point where they'd just let them fight.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big deal. So when I see this kind of stuff happen, this is tame.
I know, it does seem that way. It does, but it is on the back pages of the newspapers. But it
might be. It's not even a proper fight.
It doesn't seem like a proper fight, but it might not be anything to do with why Sarri stormed off.
You know what that is? You punch. That's
a little bit much. A little bit much. I've seen the way David Luiz goes down quite easily. you can tackle. There's no boy.
He can.
There's no point.
I reckon he can't take a punch. One punch, he's down.
Yeah, there'd be tears, wouldn't there? You sort of feel like he might start to burst into tears. You hit him and they go, you all right, David? That's what it feels like.
Love Sport.
And the London rivals, Chelsea and Arsenal, will face off for the Europa League final tonight in Baku, Azerbaijan. 2,500 miles from London. Our next guest is a Chelsea legend. I would say he's wisely decided to stay at home. Let's say good morning to Ron Chopper-Harris. Morning, Ron.
Good morning.
Morning. Big European final. You got those goosebumps. Do you still get those goosebumps as a fan that you used to get as a player?
Yes, I'm employed at Chelsea on match days and certain other aspects that go on. And, they're my club. I've spent my lifetime there and, you feel a little bit nervy, but I'm quietly confident that they'll come back.
And you're quietly confident based on the fact that, Eden Hazard's his last game probably, and you think he wants to turn it on before he leaves?
Well, I think so. I think he's a tremendous player. But I just think that, on the day, Chelsea have come out as winners.
I'm
sorry, Ron. Go on, Paul. Ron, these top class players that we've been talking, and Hazard and Mesut Ozil are the ones they can take the game away from.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about George Best, who you've played against. How would you stop someone like Eden Hazard if you were one of his opponents?
We saw how you tried to stop George Best all those years ago.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that anymore.
Well, it's a little bit different nowadays, isn't it? Because football has become a non-contact sport.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I think some of these footballers today should go and watch a rugby game and go see what goes on, and nobody rolls around and falls around. But as I say, I think that's it. You know, when you look at some of the incidents, you look at the lad at Leeds the other week that
it's
fell
pathetic,
down
holding
his face. When you know that's a crime that's come into our football. over a period of time, and I think they're the sort of people that should be, banned for a few months. But football's, as I say, I think is completely different to what it was in my time because, you could tackle. To me, football is become a non-contact sport today.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, we were talking about training ground bust-ups as well because apparently Higuain left one on David Luiz and they were not very happy with each other. I'm sure there were a few things. Didn't you have a bit of a training ground thing with Keith Weller years ago?
Yeah. Have you got time for me to go through my career with dust-ups? No, what?
Well, we finish at 10, Ron. So, just start with the A's and the B's.
Yeah. No, what happened is that, my father, when we used to train at Mitcham, my father-in-law come to pick me up one day after training and we were just, finishing up with a 7-a-side and, as my father-in-law come into the training ground, Keith Weller just shouted out, taxi for Harris, took a bit of a jibe at a slight, and I've done one of my famous late tackles and the game got abandoned, and that was that night, so that was one of them.
This is in training, right? And also this thing about Sarri, we saw the pictures of him kicking his cap up in the air and throwing it away or something. It's not what you want to see from your manager a couple of days before a major final, is it?
Well, not really. But as I say, you don't really know what earlier on the news it was on because they weren't allowed on the pitch. And then you had a bit of an altercation with, David Luiz and Higuain. Whether that had anything to do with it, you don't know. So, maybe he's a little bit nervy. Himself, he's got an important game coming up. So, sometimes it happens, but, we don't really know, you know, the truth. We can only elaborate what, you know, what has happened sort of thing.
Ron, I've got to ask, I mean, if Chelsea win tonight, OK, that's a European win, two cup finals, one win, one loss, third in the table. Does that make it a really good season for Chelsea?
Yeah, I think so, because, as I say, at the moment, I think football is dominated by two clubs, Manchester City, you know, and Liverpool. The others at the moment are there to make up the number. But I think if they was to win tonight, you can turn around and say, it's the fellas' first, you know, season in charge. He's, if it is winning the cup tonight, they got to the final of the League Cup. They've finished third. They qualify for the Champions League. So you can turn around and say, yeah, I think they've had a good season.
Yeah, I mean, it depends which fans you talk to, but certainly from an outside point of view, it does look like it's been all right. Just this thing about in training before big games, did you ease off slightly in the last couple of days? Just, you know, maybe not flying the tackles quite as much?
Listen, every game I played in, whether it was a five-a-side before a cup final or not, I only played the same way. But sometimes, you know, you ease a little bit coming to, you know, a major final and things like that. So maybe, you know, with the dust-up that's happened, you know, it might have been over nothing sort of thing. And you know what? Some of the press boys, they like to make a big story. It fills the back pages.
It certainly does. And we like to talk about it as well, Ron. Listen, we'll let you go. I hope you enjoy your evening this evening. Nice to speak to you, Ron.
OK, thanks so much indeed.
See you soon. That is Ron Chopper Harris there. And we were just talking about that tackle that he made on Jules Best. You know what? In a sense, right, if you're asking me whether I would rather see the sort of tackle that Ron did on Chopper Harris or what Patrick Bamford did at Leeds the other day against, who was it, Villa, was it, or someone, I'd rather see the tackles, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because I was embarrassed by what Bamford did.
That was. I mean, if I'm a teammate of his, you know, I'm giving it to him.
Bamford.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah,
what,
but that's what I'm talking about.
All that's wrong in football is in that.
I mean, look... Obviously, it wasn't like players were being carried off with broken legs every 5 minutes. So tackles did fly in. And of course, I'm glad that the really skillful players can now do their thing without fear of assault every 5 minutes. But I would... Sometimes you do think, no, that's not a foul. That's just a good tackle.
The thing about it is, back then, the really skillful players did their thing. They did. They did their thing then. But they had to be brave because they knew they were getting a kick in. They knew they were getting a kick in. Whereas now... Lionel Messi would have struggled to play in them days because there was no, in fact, he wouldn't have. I think he would have enjoyed it because he's tough.
And by the
way, zero protection for players.
Eden Hazard gets kicked every game right now. So it's not like it doesn't happen.
No,
but like I say, I would rather see tackles flying in, even if a little of them, if they're a little on the edge.
Well, you have to consider, now they're sort of shin high. Back then... Well, all parts of the body.
Neck high. I know. And like I say,
it didn't matter.
If you haven't seen, if you're a younger listener and you haven't seen Ron Harris's tackle on Jules Best, you should look at it. Chelsea v Man United in the early 70s, I'm guessing. Yeah. Late 60s, early 70s. And it's one of those pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like the Somme, right? Is the only way without the dead bodies and the dead horses.
Ridiculous.
Jules Best, unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
And he's running through on goal and Ron Harris suddenly appears from the right. And it's... I mean, it's amazing that Jules Best stays on his feet.
Brilliant the way he does
it. It's brilliant. You should have a look and you will wince. But anyway, it was that was Ron Harris there.
This is Love Sport.
That's one of the worst comedians I've ever seen. He won the Gong Show. You know, I talk about the Gong Show from time to time. He won the Gong Show at the Comedy Store in Manchester. And what they do is, when you win the Gong Show, which is like a gladiatorial thing where you get about 35 new acts, and most of them are terrible, and some of them have severe mental health issues, and you can boo them off. It's just brilliant fun. He won this Gong Show, so he comes on to perform at a regular night, and he's got a shopping trolley full of terrible, terrible props and terrible jokes. And he's got like a rain mac on with apples glued to it, right? That's his Apple Mac, okay? That was one of the better jokes. Anyway, he does all these... Every time what he does is he takes a prop out of the shopping basket and he holds it up and he does an awful joke about it and people don't laugh and then he chucks it on the floor. And I'm backstage with the compere waiting. The compere is going to go on and then get me on. And I says to him, Dave, you can't... you can't, you've got to clear all that stuff up because he's left it all over the floor. Don't leave it. So when, anyway, the guy goes off to the sound of his own footsteps after 10 minutes. No one's laughed. And then Dave goes on, my mate who's the compere, and he slowly, while he's chatting to the audience, he kicks all the stuff behind the curtain so nobody can see it, right? He just slowly kicks it behind the curtain. And then when he finished, he went, like it never happened. It was one of the best things I've ever heard. Like it never happened. And everyone went, yeah, okay, let's forget that. And there was a reason I was telling you that. Jacket, that's what it was. Anyway, Andy's come in. Sorry, my mind works in a mysterious way, Andy, the way you're looking at me. I get
it's
that.
Fair. No, it's fine. It's fine.
You got some front page stories
for jacket
us.
Story allowed me to run from the weather centre. True. Go and get some stories and talk about something else.
We do have a Love Sport weather centre here.
A weather blimp.
You climb down from the weather blimp. What have you got?
Do you want saucy rude story or do you want Labour story?
One of each.
Let's do all everything. So Labour's Day of Shame, screams the Mail, as pretty much does the Telegraph.
Oh, what is this?
All of this stuff. When is it not a Labour or Tory Day of Shame at the moment?
This is the Daily Mail saying this, Labour Day of Shame, and they could have had that headline any time in the last 50 years. The Daily Mail. They hate Jeremy Corbyn and everything he stands for. Even though, you know what he likes to do, Jeremy Corbyn? He likes to go to the allotment and he makes jam. That is a perfect Daily Mail reader to me. But anyway, they hate him. Why? Why do they hate him?
Oh, they're talking about anti-Semitism crisis deepens for Corbyn as race watchdog probes claims party acted unlawfully. So Labour still haven't sorted this anti-Semitism stuff out that's been rolling on and on and on and been increasingly toxic. But they have found time to dispense of Alistair Campbell as a Labour member after he confessed, makes it sound even more dramatic. Admitted voting for the Lib Dems. So I said, you can't vote for the Lib Dems if you're going to be a Labour member, but anti-Semitism is probably all right.
If he'd have voted for Hitler, he'd have still been in the party, is what you're saying, right? Basically, I'm interested enough, actually. Andy, you're from West Bromwich, right? From West Bromwich. Do they care in West Bromwich about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party? Really? And it's not to say they don't care about anti-Semitism, for one second. But do they really give a monkey's outside of the Westminster bubble?
I think people care, but broadly people are waking up and they're worried about jobs, money, getting their kids into school.
Not what's happening to the
Jews. Etc. I'm not saying they're not worried
about the
Jews, but they're not lying awake worrying, has someone said an offensive thing about Jews?
Mavis,
on
what's happening
media
with the Jews? I can't even. Sorry about the accent. Sorry. That was terrible.
He's allowed to do the accent if I'm here.
Thank you. But anyway, this goes on. But I think we have to point out this is the Daily Mail, who have been banging on about this for a while. And by the way, the Daily Mail, who in the 1930s were backers of Hitler. So let's not get carried away with what the Daily Mail is saying about protecting us Jews. We're fine without their help, frankly, I would suggest. But it is a problem. But having said that, it is a massive problem in the Labour Party and they have to sort it out because they're being investigated by the European Human Commission, the race thing.
Lots of
the people. The only other political party that have been investigated in that way are the British National Party.
Yes.
You know? Mm. So this is a serious thing.
It's not
and
a
they
good
have
look,
to,
is it?
Well, it isn't a good look. In the end, by the way, in a general election, Jewish communities account for about 5 seats. And they might have just thought, you know what, there's not much we can do about this now. We're just, I'm sure Jeremy doesn't really want to be hated by the Jews, but hey, what do you do? There are more important things for them. That's the sad fact of it.
Anyway,
that's been going on. What about the saucy story?
Well, the saucy story we'll do in one line because it is still breakfast. Dell'Alio sent me pics of his tackle, and this is a story about Lawrence Dell'Alio, rugby star, sending pictures of something on his body to someone he shouldn't, that wasn't his wife. I think we'll go and move on. More interestingly enough, another wise
story. So you just brought that up to tell us that?
I did, because it's a sports story and he's England captain.
It's not a sports story.
If you want to read it, it's out there. Just
okay, and when you say it's tackle, we're not talking about rugby tackle.
It wasn't him executing a perfect tackle.
Okay. By the way, I followed Lawrence Dell'Alio down a corridor once and he almost blocked out the light.
He's a huge man. Him and Martin Johnson.
Martin Bayfield, you met him. He's even bigger.
Oh, God.
He's got a hand. He put his hand into a fist. It was the same size as my head. It was the same size. He could have held me. He could have carried me home.
One of the most terrifying...
It was weird asking him for
one of the most terrifying moments of my career was asking Martin Johnson, who's actually quite a nice man, a quote on something. But he was so far away from me, above me, that he couldn't hear. And I was quite new to the job. And he just kept saying, sorry, sorry. And it just went on. And I couldn't get... The more nervous I got, I couldn't get any of these questions out. I was only about 18. Then it just dawdled away.
Martin, you're too tall. Come down to normal human level.
It was like Jack and the Beanstalk.
That's ridiculous.
Martin, you're too tall. Can I have a quote about rugby?
That is ridiculous. I'm just saying, just showing highlights of Arsenal-Chelsea game. Silvinho getting a good left foot. Yeah, what else you got?
Revealed how banker's wife blew $16 million in spending spree at Harrods. So this is the banker's wife from Azerbaijan, yes, who are very much in the news at the moment. And there's all talks about where have they got this money from, and there's a crime investigation.
This is the first crime that they're trying to investigate as to they don't know where the money's come
from.
Yeah,
so they don't know that there's been a crime, but they know someone's got a lot of money, and they're like, well, hang on a minute, why have you got all of this money, and your fella had this public job, and could he have nicked it? Allegations at this stage. But it's incredible what she spent the money on. 32 grand on chocolates, 4 million on luxury jewellery.
32 grand on chocolates?
Just on chocolates.
I mean,
she hasn't
eaten
it herself.
Yeah,
chocolate's great, but 30... I mean, this is
32 grand.
Godiva chocolate.
This is just in proper chocolates. This is just in Harrods as well. So this is in 1 year in Harrods. 10 grand on fruit and veg in Harrods. And in one day...
Well, she's having her five a day anyway.
In one day...
I mean, that's something, isn't it?
This is it. It's very healthy. Yeah. Very healthy. In one day alone in Harrods, she spent £11,600 on tea and coffee.
In one day? £11,600?
I don't know whether this
it must be the most expensive type of...
I'm guessing.
Limey. In one day.
It ain't PG tips.
I'm telling you that much.
She had a job lot. Is that, she had a
lorry load of
PG tips.
But it must be those fancy hampers. She must have just bought 500 for her friends or something. It must be she just gifting this stuff.
I mean, I like shopping. I mean, I don't really. Actually, when I said it, I thought, well, no, you don't. And my head is going, what are you talking about? I don't, but I quite like going to those nice food halls in Harrods and Selfridges.
Yeah, yeah.
They're lovely.
Yeah, they're
nice. I tend to wander about looking at it. Oh, look, goat's milk for 18 quid. I don't need that, but look, it looks nice, doesn't it? And the chocolates, there's... In Selfridges, they've got one of those, it's like a chocolate fondue type thing, and it's like a big chocolate fountain, and it looks, you want to dive in it, right?
The kids but I wouldn't are desperate want to, spend... to touch it, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, you know, take the kids around and stuff their faces with it, and then they're up for about a week while all that chocolate they've had. But 32 grand on chocolates, and how much was it on tea and coffee? 12 grand.
£11,600.
Seems excessive. Seems excessive.
It's a lot. Her lowest purchase was 70 pence.
What was that
in
for?
The designer watches department. I don't know what on earth you bought in the designer watches department for battery. 70 pence.
Quite what possibly. Could you buy? Although, 70p?
Even a battery.
Although if a battery runs out, she probably just chucks it away, doesn't
she?
Just
she just, I don't need this 40 grand watch. I'll buy another 40 grand watch. It's not working. Just change the battery. It's 70p, love. No.
This is it.
I mean, this is outrageous. This is awful. £16 million.
It's hideous. We get so blasé about billionaires and things now, but the waste, the criminal waste.
Criminal
waste.
Very
much could be criminal if these allegations are true.
Yes.
On vanity.
Right.
Going from tea nicely into biscuits.
One more.
Yeah, so it's National Biscuit Day, and the Daily Star...
It's not.
It really is.
National Biscuit Day.
We haven't got any in the studio. We haven't even got tea bags. It's like living as a student. National Biscuit Day, and the Daily Star have done a very interesting profile of all mad biscuit stuff. Brits buy 96 packets of biscuits a year on average.
Each,
which seems rather high. 96.
Okay.
And one nugget from this, there are several celebrity fans who are part of the McVitie's Biscuit Club, and they named Sarah Jessica Parker, glamorous star of Sex and the City, and Joey Essex. And their membership is commemorated with the receipt of a rare golden digestive biscuit.
This is one of the most...
Why are you a member of this club?
One of the most ridiculous stories you've ever brought me with a rare golden biscuit.
Yes.
I love a biscuit, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I don't eat them anymore. But
do you not? You don't eat them anymore.
Try not to, mate. No, try not.
None.
To. Yeah, because that just.
How can you live without biscuits?
I'm very difficultly. Very
that means
difficultly,
we
if that's a word. Sorry, right. It's hard stuff. I love a biscuit. I love a Dunkin' biscuit.
Yeah,
that means we can have more biscuits because he's bringing our average down.
That's
we can
true.
Go to 98.
Oh yeah.
Packets
oh, without a doubt, I'm definitely bringing the average down.
Well, anyway, it's National Biscuit Day, and the celebrations will go on long into the night. In fact, if Arsenal win tonight, I will celebrate with some rich teas.
Rich teas?
Yeah, I love a rich tea, mate.
This is Love Sport.
This could be a really amazing year for English sport. If you think about it, the England cricket team could win the World Cup. And our favourites, the England football team, yep, are not favourites to win the Nations League, but they've certainly got a very, very good chance. The rugby team are happening in November, and the women's team are playing the World Cup as well. This could be a very, very good 3-4 months for English international sport.
It's brilliant. I mean, I'm so optimistic for English sport at the moment. And I'm really looking forward to each tournament leaves you really excited, because in all of them, we've got a great chance. It's not like we're going into it thinking, well, you know what, like we used to do with the football, if we get through the group stage, that'd be great. We're actually saying semi-finals, finals, which is a fantastic positive thing for us going into tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, and it's unusual as well. It hasn't been like that for some time.
Very rare.
Let's be fair. This is the Comedy Breakfast. Oh, by the way, yes, as has just been pointed out to me by Laurie in the booth, there are four English teams in European finals as well.
Yes.
You know what? It's funny. You sort of don't even think about it, but the truth of it is, English sport is doing okay at the moment.
Going down around the rest of Europe, by the way. Not sure how.
No, of course. Well, we know about those comments that Jose Tebas, the president of La Liga, made about English football and about how there's too much money and it's playthings for countries. And yeah, to a certain extent it is. I mean, we were talking yesterday about Sheikh Khaled, who is the cousin of Sheikh Mansour. We think the cousin is looking to buy Newcastle, and the hope certainly for Newcastle fans, I know they're hoping that's in advanced talks at the moment. But you know what? Those are the big stories are happening at the moment, and if it does go ahead, I'm sure Newcastle fans will be delighted. Andy has just walked into the room bearing newspapers, and so I imagine he's got some stories for us. You've got it open at a page with Sarah Vine's column on. I mean, my God, what has she said that is in any way interesting to us? This is Michael Gove's wife, by the way.
Don't be so judgmental, Ian. Okay. You start coming with these newspapers if I'm going to use them to mop up a spill on the floor.
Sorry. What's the story?
Front story on the Times at the moment is Jeremy Hunt's gaffe has boosted Michael Gove's bid for Tory leadership. This massive bum fight, a WWE Royal Rumble, if you will, of very posh men in the Tory party trying to outdo each other.
What did Jeremy Hunt say?
Jeremy Hunt is losing support to Michael Gove in the Conservative leadership race because MPs believe he's flip-flopping on a no deal. So in this place where there's no definitives at all, someone with a clear plan, whether it's right or wrong, is the man forward. And they believe that Michael Gove is making ground on Jeremy Hunt because Michael Gove is definitive about his support for against a referendum.
We discussed, we had a couple of MPs on yesterday. We spoke to Emma Dent-Code and we spoke to Peter Bone about Brexit and all that's going on. And the point is, the Tories cannot choose a non-Brexiteer candidate. They have to choose a hard right candidate, really. Peter Bone agreed because, if they don't do that, they lose all those voters who voted for the Brexit Party. They have to get them back, otherwise that's the end of the Tory Party.
Jeremy Hunt
cannot win the Tory leadership for that reason. It's going to be one of those guys, going to be Michael Gove or Andrea Leadsom or Esther McVeigh or Boris. It has to be one of them, doesn't it?
Yes.
Have I analysed this wrong? Surely that's interesting.
I think there is room for a slight step down from that. It doesn't have to quite be hard right or super Brexit. I think there is some room for some flexibility. But you're right, there isn't room for a second referendum candidate in the Conservative Party, I don't think.
And the other thing that's interesting about this is that they're saying that Jeremy Hunt has flip-flopped on this no-deal thing. And whenever people change their minds in politics, it's seen as a bad thing. I don't know. I mean, in normal life, when people change their minds in the face of overwhelming evidence, that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. But the thing about it is, with an MP, with a politician, they are encouraging me to follow them. Trust me. This is what I'm saying. This is the truth. These are the reasons why. Trust me. Then it's all. Do you know what? I've changed my mind. Now trust me about this. Now I'm looking at it. I'm saying, hold on. You've convinced me of this. based on facts, based on your knowledge, based on your charisma, and you've changed your mind. What happens if you change it again? Now I have to start thinking about what I really know and who I want to follow.
That's a fair point, isn't it? And I don't know quite how to answer that because, yeah, you make a very fair point. But like I say, changing your mind in the face of evidence strikes me as an intelligent thing to do.
Well, just briefly, yeah. I mean, if you're going to be Prime Minister, you're Prime Minister for 4 years, typically. And it's impossible to keep your locked on for that whole period. You might, circumstances change around you, politics changes all the time.
Yeah.
You can't just say, oh, yeah, I'm definitely one thing forever and ever and ever.
Events, dear boy, events.
I think if it's the big stuff about, you know, whether you're for privatisation or against privatisation.
Oh, is that one of the politicians texting you?
But then be honest with me. Tell me it's subject to change. Don't tell me this is it. Trust me, this is it. This road A is the place where that's the way. Oh, you know, by the way, no, sorry, road B looks better, so we go that way. And then I'm sitting there thinking, right, what about road C or D? Are you gonna do that at some point?
Yeah, but on the other hand,
I'm not having you.
On the other hand, you've got to say a politician like Jeremy Corbyn, who appears to have basically made his mind up when he's 18 and not changed it very much at all. I'm not sure that's healthy either. You're actually showing us a piece with Sarah Vine talking about her husband, who's Michael Gove.
Well, this is interesting. So Ed Miliband, when he was Labour leader, talks about how annoying and strange he found it having to wheel his wife around like a sort of an ornament. And I think there's a lot of been this battle of the wives with candidates for the Tory leadership where they're sort of bringing their wives out. Sarah Vine, who is obviously the wife of Michael Gove, who's very much a candidate, throwing herself in this time, you know, not being invited, she's a journalist. She says, he can't load the dishwasher, Michael Gove, and he took his driving test 7 times, but there's one job I think my husband would do well, which is obviously lead the Conservative Party and be Prime Minister.
See, right. She shouldn't be saying all of that. I look at that and I think the one person I don't want to hear from is you on that. I really don't, because you have a vested interest. There was a definite conflict. I'm not having it from
She's
you.
She's got her pro Michael Gove goggles on.
I'm not having it from you. I'm not having it.
Right. I mean, look, he can't load the dishwasher. Well, I mean, that's a bit weird because...
What's that got to do with politics?
No, but first of all, how is it possible not to be able to load the dishwasher?
Oh, trust me, there's people that can't.
There's a lot of ways that you can do it wrong. I'm instructed every day that I've stacked it wrong.
Should you just put the
stuff in order and then it gets clean rather than, oh, this has got to go there, this has got to go there.
Really? I'm with you, my friend. I'd be instructing you.
I haven't got a dishwasher.
I'm terribly anal with that.
Really?
There's a certain way you've got to do it. There's rules.
What is wrong with you?
There's rules. You've got to do it a certain way.
Okay, well, anyway, he can't do it.
He gets clean, bring it out, put it back.
Yeah, he can't do it. And what else can he not do? He took seven goes.
Seven driving tests.
Well, how many do you take for you, boss?
Two.
What about you? Four. Oh, four. I was three. I mean, that's not unusual, is it? But seven's
quite a lot.
All right.
Seven, by five, you're giving up.
That would show his reactions aren't very good, or he's not very good at obeying instructions.
One of those. Right, so if he's the Prime Minister, he's pushing us towards war, and we say we need an emergency stop.
Yeah.
When I bang my hand on the desk... call the troops back and he can't react in time and suddenly something like that is what she's saying. What a strange article that is. How is that allowed to be written though? Well, she's an amazing...
But hang on a minute, they're hiring her because she's obviously a very noteworthy journalist. It's a typically conservative newspaper, so they're running that. And if you're the husband of somebody, the wife of somebody, you want that in the paper. You want him to talk about what's he like and et cetera, et cetera. Mm. You probably don't want, you know, it being a pamphlet for his leadership.
She ain't going to curse him out in there.
No, but that's true.
It humanises him somewhat. And if anyone needs humanising, it's Michael Gove.
He doesn't look human.
That's a bit mean.
He does not look. I look at that guy and I just think... It makes me think, I wonder what planet he's from.
He makes John Redwood. Then we're getting out there. But I don't know. I don't mind people being humanised. But you got one more story there?
Yeah. In other wife news.
Yes.
What an Amazon delivery. Tycoon's ex. This is Jeff Bezos, richest man on earth. Mackenzie Bezos. She's been given £29 billion from him in this divorce settlement. She's going to give away £15 billion to charity.
Good causes. Yeah, I think that's... And just keep the £15 million for herself.
£15 billion.
Billion
Let's
for
be
herself.
Honest, none of us can relate to that. Well, we look at that and just think it's like Monopoly money.
It's nice.
It really is.
It's good that she's giving some of it away. And I mean, what an amazing thing to be able to do.
Well, she's not struggling, is she?
No, she's not.
She'd never get through the 29. No one would get through the 29 billion.
I'll tell you who'd get through the 29 billion. That wife who went shopping and spent £12 million on tea in a day or whatever the hell it was.
She's the one.
Anyway, she's giving away 15 billion. Yep. Jeff Bezos is Bezos' ex-wife.
She's claiming the moral high ground here, and very, very much so after he disappeared with that other woman. So
if she wants to buy a football team, Arsenal is not for sale at the moment, but you've got to be a better owner than Stan Kroenke.
When you've been let down
kindly Stan and Kroenke, you got anyway. Sorry, when you've been let in
down,
my head.
When you've been let down by one man, what better way to go forward than be let down by 11 men every week?
Wolf, do you know what? He's learning, isn't he? Yes, it's good. I like it.
Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.